From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I am Ben. We are here with our super producer, Noel the were-rabbit?
Yep.
Were-rabbit Brown?
Yep.
Okay, all right. Noel the were-rabbit Brown.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's good to see you, were, Mr. Rabbit. And, you know, it's good to see that you and I are here safe in the audio studio with Noel. We found him. We found all these mics again and all the equipment. It's
yes,
crazy.
The hard drives were unsmashed. Ladies and gentlemen, we played a bit of an April Fool's prank that we hope you enjoyed. It seemed like most people enjoyed it.
I think so.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a, I guess it was a warm reception. There were some comments that didn't make it to the page.
Oh, well, yeah, that can happen. But, we do appreciate everyone playing along with us there and, not ruining this prize for some other people.
Exactly.
I saw some especially clever Tosino and spaghetti references.
Yes, which we could, people suggesting where we could hide amongst the spaghetti trees.
Mm-hmm, which, all came from a brilliant idea on your part, Matt. And it's strange. Just April Fools in general, before we get into what the show's about today, April Fools in general is not something that I'm the biggest fan of because I think it can go too far, you know?
Sure. And you can have fun with it as well, I think. A lot of companies do. I saw Google made the actual cloud app or whatever it was. Forget exactly what the video was, but Google came out with a thing this year about the actual cloud.
I haven't seen that yet.
It was just the idea that they're storing information on an actual cloud. At the end, there's a – spoiler alert, sorry. There's a man and his daughter staring and looking at the clouds, and the father is explaining to the child about what the cloud is and what it does. And at the end, as it goes to the title screen, the little girl's just like, oh, okay. It's pretty great.
Nobody tell Wilhelm Reich and the Orgone crew. I always wanted a cloud buster just to have.
Yeah, that would be dangerous.
As a thing at my house. April Fool's Day is interesting because it came about sort of as a result or a symptom of some arguments regarding calendars, right? Mm-hmm. And what we are talking about today is also something that has a chronological debate dogging it. Calendars play in big. It is one of the most important holidays, holy days, technically. We'll take it back to the proper etymology.
Okay.
One of the most important holy days in the Christian sphere. Every denomination celebrates this, maybe not on the same day, maybe not in the same way, but it is a big deal.
Absolutely. The events celebrated in the life of Jesus Christ on this day are the perhaps the crux of the religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this, of course, as you all know probably by now, is Easter. We are talking about Easter, the commemoration of the day that Christians believe Jesus Christ, after his crucifixion, was resurrected and returned to the living.
And thankfully, we work for a company called How Stuff Works, and we've got wonderful articles that go into just long detail in this stuff. So we're going to be talking at least partly, if not a lot, we're going to be speaking to you from an article called How Easter Works on HowStuffWorks.com.
Right, by a writer named John Airy, who did a bang-up job. So the first things we need to know about Easter, the very first basic thing, it's super old. It is very, very, very old. The stuff that is part of Easter does predate the time of Christ. So we already know what Easter is today. Maybe that's the best way to start. What happens today?
Sure. When you think of Easter nowadays in the modern 2015 world, you think about candy, think about jelly beans, Easter eggs, you know, a bunch of colorful eggs and the dyes that go with them. For me, the smell of the vinegar dye.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
I remember that really well as a child. Let's see. Bunnies. We think about bunnies.
Mm-hmm.
Even the baskets that you'll see little children's walking around with.
Mm-hmm.
Very cute.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not just a commercial venture. That's not what Easter is. It's not a festival for Hallmark and Kroger and all these places.
Yeah. Yeah. It's according to, like, encyclopedias, Merriam-Webster, Encyclopedia Britannica, it is a Christian church festival celebrating, as we said, the return of Jesus Christ to life following his death, or alternately defined as the Sunday in early spring on which this festival is observed. We said that's the central festival of the church, but it's also the oldest one. Second oldest one, excuse me.
Yes, observance of the Sabbath would be number one there.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike festivals that you would – other Christian festivals that you would think of that are very important, like Christmas, mm-hmm. Easter has been celebrated without interruption since the times of the New Testament.
Yeah, and the second big thing to know as we go into this is that schedule-wise, Easter is complicated.
Yeah. So – okay, let's just go into this. This is from Britannica, Encyclopedia Britannica. Western Christians celebrate Easter on that first Sunday after the full moon, which is the Paschal moon. Now, that occurs on or next after the vernal equinox on March 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Paschal moon, which is calculated from the system of golden numbers, and it's a little complicated here,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't necessarily, Easter Sunday doesn't necessarily coincide with an astronomical full moon, which occurs on a Sunday. Easter is just the following Sunday.
Right, yeah.
That's all confusing to me.
Yeah, right. So we're talking about two different kind of moons. There's
yes.
a lunar calendar, which is, which we can get into a little bit in more detail, but there's the real full moon, the one you walk outside and see
mm-hmm.
in the darkness, and then there is the scheduled, the calendrical, if I can make up a word,
okay.
Moon. So the U.S. Naval Observatory's Astronomical Applications Department put some work into this, and they've come to the conclusion that Easter is determined by what's called the ecclesiastical moon.
Okay.
That would be the calendar moon, right?
Okay.
And that's defined by these church-constructed tables, timetables, that are permanently supposed to be used for calculating the full or the phase of the full moon. Now, this full moon, as we said, isn't necessarily the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and this means that Easter is not necessarily the Sunday after a full moon. It could just be the next Sunday after the ecclesiastical moon.
Now, here's the weird thing. Easter, it means that Easter doesn't necessarily fall on the same day every year. There's a fairly wide range. I think it's March 22nd until, what was it, April 25th?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a movable feast. That's mm-hmm. the technical phrase, and I enjoy that phrase. This date you were talking about, this date range, was decreed by a pope, right?
Yes, Pope Gregory the 13th in 1582, and he made this, or this was decreed as a part of the Gregorian calendar, the changes that were occurring in the calendar up until that day.
Ah, okay. And in New Testament times, the Christian church celebrated Easter when people of the Jewish faith were observing Passover.
Mm.
By the middle of the second century, though, this moved, Easter, that is, moved to the Sunday after Passover, and the council of Nicaea, which we have talked about many times,
mm-hmm.
One of the decisions they made, and that was way back in 325 AD or CE, which mm-hmm. we can always open up that old can of worms,
don't
right?
Do it.
That all churches should celebrate the Easter together on a Sunday. However, there's a big difference here between the Western Christian world and the Eastern Christian world.
Yeah, Eastern Orthodox Church, it may even celebrate Easter up to a month afterwards, which it's interesting. And the calculation of the date is based on the Julian calendar for them,
mm-hmm.
which is very different from from the other one, the Gregorian calendar, which is 13 days behind.
Right.
Which is interesting. So Julian is 13 days behind the Gregorian. So perhaps, you know, there's some difference there.
Right. There is some scheduling here. I don't know if you could call it a huge controversy. It was indeed historically a source of enormous controversy. But the churches seem to have adopted a sort of live and let live attitude, you know?
Yeah, and ultimately, maybe this is – correct me if you think I'm just being way too – casual about this, but it is a festival to celebrate something. For me, it isn't necessarily important if it gets on the exact correct day. It just seems as though it's important that it's celebrated on a yearly basis.
I see what you're saying. There are probably quite a few people who feel that way. But the fact of the matter is, today in modern times, we don't have a lot of people, you know, traveling to an Eastern Orthodox church to protest the time that they celebrate Easter.
No.
So let's talk about the actual day, right?
Sure.
So we've already talked about some of this stuff. We do know that when this Sunday occurs, whenever it does actually occur, it's going to be celebrated in different ways throughout the world, mm-hmm. or even from country to country. In the United States, there's often a thing called the sunrise service, right?
Oh, I've been to many of those in my day.
That's true. Yeah, you have. I remember you mentioning some of these. What's that about?
Well, it was just, if I recall correctly,
mm-hmm.
We would go out to – we had our church fairly close to a lake, and we would go out to this little chapel on the lake that was mm-hmm. an exterior chapel. It was just pews that were outside. And we would, as the sun would rise, it was almost symbolic of Jesus resurrecting the sun itself, the S-U-N.
Right, yes. And also the arrival in Jerusalem before mm-hmm. sunrise on that Sunday of his resurrection. Here's an interesting fact that some people might not know. It might be surprising to some of our listeners here, Matt. Easter was not celebrated or mentioned in the Bible.
No, it is not mentioned in the Bible. The 3-day period, Good Friday when Jesus was thought to be killed, mm-hmm. then buried, then on Easter Sunday, 3 days later, rose from the dead, got out of the stone moved, and he mm-hmm. was gone. That is more of not modern Christian.
Right.
But post-Bible writing Christianity.
I see. And it's actually, at least it's not mentioned as Easter in the biblical text. It's important for us to say, and maybe we should have mentioned something about this at the top, that when we talk about these sorts of topics, these articles of faith, we're not making any value or judgment call about what you or your friends or your enemies or the people you see on the street believe.
No.
That's not really our place. But what we can do and what we are going to do is look into the origins of Easter, the possible origins of Easter as the event it is today. So, you know, counting, for example, the rabbit and the eggs mm-hmm. and that sort of stuff. We're not in any way saying that we're going to bust some story, but it is interesting to us that there's such controversy even today over how this started. So it's pretty immediate when you look at just the history of it, right?
Yeah. A lot of people don't agree about the origins of Easter,
mm-hmm.
which should be no surprise. You'll often hear it attributed to a couple things. One would be pre-existing religious rites, particularly spring festivals and fertility rituals.
Right,
A lot of people would say these are pagan rituals. That's mm-hmm. Inside quotes if you couldn't tell. which, again, pagan is a loaded term. I used to hear that a lot, and I still do hear the word pagan a lot, and it doesn't seem to be referencing anything besides non-monotheistic.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting when we hear the way that word is used mm-hmm. often as sort of a pejorative or derogatory, mm-hmm. you know, and then there are neo-pagans who consciously identify themselves as pagans. And then there are people who feel like that's very disrespectful. You know, don't call me a pagan. For instance, I am a Wiccan or something like that.
Absolutely.
You know, listeners, I know that a lot of us out there are hearing stuff like that and saying, well, I don't want to be offensive, but what's the right term?
Correct.
So the idea, there's this one idea that's very popular that the celebration of Easter is based on an older worship of a goddess, a Saxon goddess. And you'll hear this get thrown around as the definite truth, the stuff they don't want you to know about Easter celebrations. But when you trace back this claim, it all goes back to one guy who's got a great name, the Venerable Bede.
B-E-D-E. Awesome.
Yeah. And he wrote this thing called The Reckoning of Time in the 8th century. And he states that Anglo-Saxons during a month that was roughly around April called Eostermonap. I probably butchered that. But he states that there were these feasts held in honor of this goddess spelled E-O-S-T-R-E, Easter, Oster. But that this tradition died out and it was replaced by this Christian tradition, this Paschal month, which, you know, as we say, is the celebration of the resurrection of Christ. So this guy, venerable though he may be, is the only source of this claim, apparently. And you can find various historians saying that not only was the only source of it, but they think he made it up or he, you know.
Perhaps it's just tough to prove it, right?
Right, yeah. We didn't have the kind of record keeping that we have today. But also, you know, we see this kind of parallel of things happen often. Just look at the various messianic figures who have had stories very similar to what we would recognize as the modern life and death cycle, life, death, and rebirth cycle of Jesus Christ, you know. So there are – it's fascinating stuff. And one of our coworkers, Joe McCormick, on Forward Thinking is a bit of a scholar with this kind of stuff. So we usually check in with him on this before we do something. Joe, if you're listening – we're doing our best.
Yeah. We will ask for your help retroactively.
Right, yeah. We'll change the calendar so that this comes out on a different day. There's this other idea. So that's one idea, the idea that it's based on an earlier, quote, pagan festival. There's the second idea, which you will also hear, that it is a purely Christian tradition, that this is a solely original Christian thing. And then you'll see, you'll see different people arguing this, I would say with varying levels of persuasiveness. However, at this point, the secular truth of the matter is that the historians and the researchers aren't bearing that out. They're finding an evolution.
Yeah, and evolution is a good way to put it. This is the same thing we found when we were researching Christmas, how these holidays and celebratory feasts and stuff like that really do seem to have evolved over time as religions and faiths started meeting each other in the world, as these various faiths started growing. And it kind of just became, okay, well, here are these set days where we can celebrate the thing that we need to celebrate, and we'll focus it around this day because we all kind of already had these days just because everybody had not the same calendar, but they were looking at the same moon, right?
Right.
Everybody's looking at the same sun and where it's going and how everything's changing in the world during cycles. It's very interesting.
Well, and also, you know, it occurs to me, Matt, that maybe – evolved is a loaded term for to object in this situation. But there is this, I think, incredibly inspiring and continual struggle that the entire human species has been doing since we got into this counting thing. And that's trying to remember the past and when things happened, such that we can predict when things will occur again, equinoxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So much of our early knowledge is astronomical.
Yeah.
Right? There's this third one that we've kind of mentioned, that it was a tradition based on the pre-existing Jewish Passover. And here's something that throws a little bit of salt or shade, whichever your preferred mm-hmm. slang is, on the idea of this Anglo-Saxon goddess. The word for Easter in most non-English languages is based on the Paschal, the P-A-S-C-H-A-L mm-hmm. root word, Latin yep. and Greek. So it doesn't doesn't seem as likely in other countries. Now, of course, this linguistic pattern doesn't give us a clear origin point yet for
no.
for the timing of the celebration, right?
Yeah, there are people who get degrees based very closely in just studying root words like that and Greek mm-hmm. root words mm-hmm. that go back and trying to analyze these ancient texts. So don't take it from Ben and I.
Right.
These are just the things we have observed and researched.
So when we talk about this stuff, when we talk about Easter, one of the things that we have to talk about are the various symbols that in
yes.
modern times have become associated with this, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things you've heard, and I remember hearing this term first from a song, I think. It was like a schoolyard song that we used to sing in preschool about hot cross buns. And according to this book, Dates and Meanings of Religious and Other Festivals, hot cross buns, they used to be kept specifically for Good Friday with the symbolism, obviously, of the cross.
Uh-huh.
Although it's thought that the hot cross buns originated prior, you know, before mainstream Christian times, I guess, mm-hmm. pagan times.
Okay.
The bun represents the moon and its four quarters. That's the idea of the hot cross bun. So you've got bun and then this, I think the pictures I've seen have a white cross mm-hmm. on the center of it. So then you got the four quadrants or stages of the moon.
Yes. Yeah. Which is fascinating to me because I had no idea that was true. The custom there apparently tracing back to, when people who worshiped Zeus would bake a cake in the form of a bull with a cross upon it to represent its horns.
That's got to be more difficult than it sounds.
You know, have you ever tried to shape something and bake it?
Not without some kind of mold.
Not without some kind of mold. I have tried and failed multiple times. I have made just gingerbread abominations. There's some things that man, or at least this guy, was not meant to bake.
And this is leavened bread, too.
Right, yes, yeah. The thing that is a hot cross bun now was a talisman of sorts,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is fascinating. People would hang buns from their kitchen ceilings to protect their households from evil for the rest of the year. And,
nice.
Yeah. And they were baked so much that they didn't really get moldy as much as you would, you know, cause I know what people are thinking, right? You're thinking,
yeah.
So you hang these pieces of bread that become mold in your house.
Mm.
Mm.
Has that funky smell that's hard to place.
Until
you like look up and you go, oh man, that green stuff's mm-hmm. probably not good.
Precious mold. Now, another thing, while we're on the subject of food, there's typically an Easter feast of some sort. And this can be super elaborate. It can change depending on which country you go to. Often people will have an Easter ham, for instance.
Yep. That was my family. We would...
Yeah.
We would always get a honey-baked ham. Oh, wow. I'm such a middle-class white kid, aren't I?
Why are you beating yourself up?
I can see my family and I going to get our ham for Easter.
What kind of sides did you guys make?
We didn't cook, man.
Oh, okay.
We just got the sides from honey-baked ham.
Oh.
It's so sad.
No, seriously, man. Don't beat yourself up over that. I think feasts in general are amazing things. I'm down
for
a feast.
Sure, absolutely. Not that I did not love that brown sugar coating on that ham. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. It sounds good. I'm getting hungry thinking about it. And let's, you know, while we're talking about food, let's get to the big one, right?
Okay.
The Easter eggs. What?
Why?
Yeah, even as a child, at quite a young age, I'm sure I wasn't the only one. I'm sure a lot of you listeners were saying, so wait. Although we are celebrating this very important day,
mm-hmm.
For the most important person or the son of God, there's also an anthropomorphic rabbit that lays eggs.
Don't think about it, Ben. all I have to say is I have vivid memories of running around the churchyard mm-hmm. in Chamblee, Georgia, mm-hmm. and finding Easter eggs as a kid. I have vivid memories of that and how much fun I had.
Yeah, Easter egg hunts are really fun.
Dude, it's cool. Was awesome.
It's cool, and it gets people to associate the day if they're, you know, if they're not into mm-hmm. the belief system behind sure. it, right? Then it gets people to, or children at least, to associate the day with a lot of fun
yeah.
and really good stuff.
Exactly. And then you start learning about it as you get older.
Right.
It's a perfect idea. Here's one of the coolest things about this, though.
What's that?
We found that this whole dying of Easter eggs thing isn't something that was come up with for, you know, to sell more dye originally. This is an ancient thing. Oh, and that sounds bad, but a lot of the times traditions that we found, some traditions in the modern way mm-hmm. have some kind of profit motive behind them. Some of the ones that we've looked at.
Right.
It's really nice to know that this one, at least originally, wasn't. Mm-hmm. So if you go way back to ancient times when the Egyptians and Persians were running around, Egyptians and Persians in ancient times, these two exchange dyed eggs with friends.
Ah, okay.
And it was in Mesopotamia that Christians first gave eggs to their friends at Easter to remind them of the resurrection of Jesus as a little token of remembrance.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That comes from the author, Roland Purton. So all the way back to Mesopotamia, there is a modern industry now around dyeing eggs, but
yes, there
was also a practice there. Interesting too, because, you know, an egg is symbolically, it's very much a symbol of fertility, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
So centuries ago, when Lent ended on Easter Sunday, it became tradition for people to give these decorated eggs as presents to their friends and servants, right?
Mm-hmm.
And over time, this tradition has continued, and there are some Eastern European regions, particularly in Ukraine, where people are known for their beautiful and intricate, elaborate, ornate egg designs, right?
Oh, yeah. It's just beautiful-looking stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
It is weird, Ben, to me, that an egg that you would use to dye, mm-hmm. that you'd buy at a store and then use to dye for Easter, it's supposed to be a symbol of fertility, but really it's a perfect symbol of infertility because it's the result of not being fertilized.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right. I never thought about that.
Yeah, if it were actually the fertility, there would be mm-hmm. a chicken there, and you'd have to take it back and give it to the mama chicken.
This is a total side note. Have you ever heard of balut?
No.
So, balut is this thing. It's in the Philippines. They fertilize an egg. And they cook it, and you know, when you buy it, you crack open the shell and you eat up the embryo, basically.
Thanks, Ben.
No worries, man. I had one.
Did you really?
Yep.
Was it any good?
I'm not eating them now. That's for sure.
Okay.
And I don't know how much of that is just a reaction to texture. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure.
But anyhow, that has nothing to do with anything except check it out, listeners, if you haven't heard of that already. Side note. Balut is traditionally considered an aphrodisiac. I don't know why. I cannot speak for the results.
Maybe it's kind of like watching horror films where you're just so freaked out by the experience that you seek comfort.
That your nervous system just gives you the fight or flight.
That's probably what it is.
So the tradition of giving eggs to friends and associates toward the end of Lent is, according to Snopes, we looked into this, eggs were one of the foods forbidden during Lent. So Easter, an Easter egg was like a special treat, a reward of sorts.
Uh-huh.
And, the candy Easter eggs of the modern times go back to another more serious purpose in earlier Christianity, when hard-boiled eggs were dyed red in memory of blood, of Jesus Christ's blood, and given to children,
Whoa.
Again, to help to preserve their health.
Wow. Okay.
So it's like you could get a hot cross bun in the house, an egg for the kid. And that again, all of these things vary a little bit across cultures. there are also, we've talked about some traditional foods. So let's talk about some traditional activities, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we talked about the sunrise services held outside.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Let's stroll around the world, shall we?
All right, well, let's head over to Bulgaria. In Bulgaria, people don't hide eggs. They have egg fights, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like fun and like a lot of work for mom and dad in the morning or, you know, later that evening when you got to clean everything up.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Whoever comes out of the game with an unbroken egg is the winner and assumed to be the most successful member in the family for the coming year. So it's a nice omen or what is the opposite of an omen?
The opposite. You could have a good omen.
You have good omen? Okay.
Yeah.
Then it's a good omen for the family, for that family member. In another tradition, the oldest woman in the family will take the faces of the little children and then rub them with the first red egg she's colored. And that will symbolize her wish that they have rosy cheeks, health, and strength.
And in Mexico, if we head on over to Mexico, then we find that the children will traditionally smash eggs over each other's heads in the week before Lent. These eggs are filled with small pieces of paper rather than raw egg.
That's very nice. Again, like people thinking about mom and dad and what we gotta do. In Germany, eggs are dyed green on Maundy Thursday.
Yeah, this is always between the 19th of March and the 22nd of April. It could be on different days depending on the Gregorian or Julian calendar used. You're right though, it's the Thursday before Easter. And it commemorates the Last Supper of Jesus Christ. And it's called Maundy Thursday because it also commemorates that washing of the feet.
M-A-U-N-D-A-Y? M-A-U-N-D-Y.
Yes. Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
And this is something that is bigger in other countries. It's not the biggest thing in the United States, at least. In Greece, there's a public procession, an Easter parade, and these red eggs are tapped together while people have a call and response chant. In the U.S., there are some parades, the oldest being the one at Atlantic City. And the best one maybe being the one in New York, which is often how it goes with parades.
Mm-hmm. The Fifth Avenue one?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome.
And in England, there's a thing called the hair pie scramble and bottle kicking.
Okay, that sounds fun.
All right, what's the story behind that?
Okay. Well, the story goes that a woman was saved by a hare running across the path of a bull. So that's kind of interesting and possibly symbolic. On Easter Monday, hundreds of years ago. Now, as a token of her appreciation, she bequeathed a piece of land to the rector. And it's important to know that the sole condition for this giving of the land was that the rector have a hare pie made, H-A-R-E pie, made to be distributed to all the parishioners together with a large quantity of ale every year for a feast.
I mean, that sounds cool. I would be so down for that.
Hare pie.
Yeah.
It sounds horrible.
Right, yes. But it's fortunate for us, Matt, that it brings us to one of the biggest characters for this time of the year, and that is the Easter rabbit.
The Easter bunny.
The Easter bunny, yes, yeah. Sounds like an old longtime favorite of yours.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a big fan. I think I had a stuffed bunny.
Yeah.
A large stuffed bunny.
Did you ever see that website where it's just pictures of scary-looking Easter bunnies?
I have.
I think we looked at that together,
yes,
didn't we, a while
I'm never
back.
Going back to that URL.
I go back there often just to check it out. All right, so this creature, also not mentioned in this form in a biblical text.
Nope.
But rabbits, like eggs, are powerful symbols traditionally of fertility and new life and therefore an Easter ceremony. Now, this Easter bunny, like Santa Claus or Saint Nick, has become a popular children's character. The year round, really, you can see Easter bunny. I don't know. It's in the zeitgeist. You know, it's not weird for there to be an Easter bunny sketch on your favorite comedy show.
Absolutely not.
Right. But it could be that this is sort of a, a historical mistake, because Snopes tells us that all manner of rabbits are said to lay eggs on Easter Day.
Say, hold on. What?
Yeah.
You're telling me the rabbits lay eggs?
Are said to.
Oh, okay. You know, all right.
You
got to
be very careful with the language there. That's like the pursuit of happiness.
Oh, that's dark. Okay, continue.
So the hare itself, always seen pre-Christian times, associated with fertility, the returning spring, and similar to the study of the groundhog shadow on Groundhog Day,
okay,
movements of the hare, because originally it was a hare, movements of the hare were seen as portents or possibly omens, ways to figure out what would be happening in the coming year. So the hare itself is hares and rabbits are often confused. Or hares and bunnies, and a hare is a larger version with some distinct differences. They're different animals. They're not synonyms.
Awesome.
But the Easter bunny is the U.S. go-to, right?
Yeah, the cute little hoppy hoppy bunny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he shows up in the 16th century literature as a deliverer of eggs. In his own way, in springtime, St. Nicholas bent on, you know, rewarding the good would give out his candy, and the special treats in the shoes, and there are all kinds of traditions with that.
Right.
The little bunny then goes around and gives out colored eggs.
But only to the good kids.
Exactly. Only the ones get coal eggs, I guess. No?
I don't know. I guess I was never that bad of a kid.
Spoiled eggs?
Oh, that's unfair.
And you never know until you crack it open.
Oh man, that would ruin a child's spring.
Yeah, it's like a cruel fortune cookie.
But so this Easter bunny stuff. This is German in origin, leading back to kind of what the Venerable Bede was saying. Hares were sacred to the different festivals. Arguably, too, this festival of the goddess Easter, which, again, still a subject of debate for people. But at some point, the hare was replaced by the rabbit. And that's because, common conjecture is because.
Yeah. Just they're hard to tell apart. So
right.
It was just, we got a rabbit. That's fine. And I can imagine in a pinch and you're trying to get your Easter celebration ready. Nobody will know it's a rabbit.
No, nobody will know. So here is I guess it's time for us to say the big secret, which we've talked about and is similar to some of the stuff we saw at Christmas and some of the stuff we saw in our Halloween episode. And that is modern day Easter celebrations are a kind of religious syncretism. What's religious syncretism?
That's kind of what I was mentioning earlier when it's different religions borrowing from one another or faiths borrowing from one another or kind of congealing into one particular celebration or one particular holiday or one particular belief.
Kind of like how we've talked about folk saints in earlier episodes. We had the experiences I had with Saint Simon and Mashimon, right?
Yes.
And maybe more recent example of religious syncretism would be the followers of Santa Muerte in Mexico in the Southwest United States. This is a folk saint who is sort of a female patron of death.
Nice.
And not necessarily an evil or bad thing at all. But
just the passing.
Right.
As the spirit goes.
Right. So, religions like people do not exist in a vacuum, at least historically. And so although although from our perspective, right, humans live a very short amount of time in comparison to the amount of time our species is around or even civilization. So it may seem that none of the things that we see every year that are long-held traditions are changing, but the truth is that over time, they do seem to change. They adapt to other cultures, different practices or traditions take hold, and this is something that has kind of happened with Easter eggs and with the rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. You can look back to those early Christian times to see the spring fertility rites and rituals that you can bring in with the Easter eggs, like we said, the eggs, the rabbits, the hares. A lot of this goes back to that stuff. And for obvious reasons, you know, these are fertility symbols. We're talking about springtime.
Right, yes. The symbolic resurrection of the world after the death, the symbolic death of winter.
Exactly.
And you can go back further and find, you know, stories of gods who were, you know, like vegetative gods who died with the harvest and were born again. And this does not in any way invalidate, of course, the story of Easter or dilute it. It's
for me, it makes it richer.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man.
Because there's this long history of this kind of thing. I don't know. That's what I see, at least.
So it's interesting, though. One thing we do know for sure is that the United States was, in comparison to Europe at the time when people were celebrating this stuff, they were the ones who substituted the rabbit, the bunny rabbit, for the hare. Because we just had more rabbits.
Yeah, more rabbits. And, you know, it looks better on a postcard or in an ad. If you're having an Easter sale or something like that, you have a cute little bunny that you just want to reach out and touch and pet instead of this hare that's, you know, maybe standing up on its back legs.
Right, yeah. So here's our ultimate verdict of what people know now. And there's an exciting thing, too, we have to mention toward the end. Despite the controversy over its origins, it's indisputable. Easter remains one of the most important celebrations or, again, holy days in the Christian experience, right? And along the way in its formation, it acquired, primarily in terms of symbols, it acquired other pre-existing symbols and traditions, right? And this doesn't invalidate it, but those things, some of them, especially the rabbit, were around beforehand. The nature of their existence beforehand, other than saying fertility rites, is still somewhat nebulous. You'll hear a lot of people claim that they have figured it out, right?
Yeah.
But, and perhaps they have, but at this point, there's not a universally agreed origin of these practices and the ways in which they melded to form the festival that is celebrated today.
Yep. I just want to say I have so many great memories still of Easter. And it makes me – this podcast is making me want to go visit my parents on Easter and go to church with them just to go do the whole thing.
Yeah?
Get my ham. Really, I really want that ham.
Are they going to get a ham this year, you think?
I hope so. I can only assume. It's been a while since I've done Easter with them. But
yeah. I go and try to bring my mom something.
You know what? I'm gonna call them. I'm glad that you do that and you bring something to your mom. That's very nice. But I'm gonna call right after this.
So we are concluding our podcast today. We hope that this look at some of the hidden origins of Easter symbols has been at least interesting. And with that, you guys, thank you so much for listening. We hope that you have enjoyed our episode on the hidden meaning of Easter symbols. If you would like to learn more, please do check out some of our videos we have coming up.
Definitely go to howstuffworks.com, check out that How Easter Works article, and then just peruse around that thing. It's huge, How Stuff Works, and you can find everything there.
There's some neat stuff, too. There's some good articles. And a couple of my favorite writers on the site get weird with it.
Yeah, they do. Especially our buddies, Josh Clark, Jonathan Strickland.
Robert Lamb.
Dude. Gets weird.
Yeah. So if you're into weird, which I assume you are if you're checking out our show, then you will enjoy that and many more articles. If you would like to hear every podcast we've ever done and see almost every video that we've ever done, we have our own website, too. It's stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com.
So go check us out there. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you don't want to do any of that stuff, do one simple thing. Write to us. We are
Conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracystuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.